apologizing for Crystal. She cannot speak up today because she lost her voice. Yes. And Ken Bergwer, he's unavailable. We'll just say it, unavailable. He missed the bus, so. So we're excited to talk to you about this topic. It's normally called the testing effect, but it's bigger than just testing, so the technical term is memory retrieval. The question is, if you had to learn that, some history, pretty obscure actually, or if you had to learn how to conjugate German verbs, or if you had to learn that, some biology, how would you go about studying that if you're going to be tested on it? So that's what the talk is all about today. What's the best way to study, really? And is there a best way to study? And actually, when we're done, we're probably going to say there isn't a best way to study, but there's a best way to learn things. But it's not study. So it's called the testing effect. So we're going to go through what is the testing effect or memory retrieval. Why does it work so well? And how do I implement it in my class? So the last third of the presentation today, we will talk very specifically about K-12 and middle school, high school, and elementary school. How do you take this technique and implement it so you can use it? First, I want to introduce what is the testing effect. Now, there have been literally, I hate that word literally, but really literally, hundreds and hundreds of research projects, just like the one I'm going to tell you about. They all show the same thing, but this one's pretty easy to understand. So what was done is there were three sets of students. They were randomized, but identical sets of students. All three groups of students were given some informational topics to learn about. It had to do with sea otters and the sun, things like that. And each group was allowed to study that material one time. Then the first group on the left was allowed to study three more times. So after the initial study period, a few days later they studied it again. And then a few days later they studied it again. And then a few days later they studied it again. So four times they studied it. The middle group was almost the same. They studied it at the same time as the first group, and then they studied it again, just like the first group, and then they studied it again for a third time. The fourth time, though, I have a T up there because instead of studying, they took a test on the material. And then there was a third group. And just like the first two groups, they studied the material the first time, and then they never studied it again. Instead, when the other groups were allowed to study, they took a test. And the third time they studied it, instead of studying it, they took a test. And then the fourth time, they took a test. Now, they never received any feedback on their test. How well did they do? They didn't know. They just took a test on the material. Now, after those four sessions, which took about 2 weeks to do, they said, next week, we're going to give you a final examination on that material. How do you think you're going to do on that test? So I've kind of got the results hidden here. And on the bottom, we see the three groups. There's SSSS, that's study four times, and SSST and STTT. And when we ask them to predict, how well will you do when you take a final exam 1 week after the last session? No surprise, this is what they predicted. The more you study, the more you learn. It kind of makes sense. That's actually what I would have predicted, too, if I was in these groups. But then they gave them the test. How did it come out? Well, no surprise, or we wouldn't be here today. But the group that learned the most studied one time, and then they took three tests. Never receiving feedback, just taking tests, and they did the best. So, studying once, taking three tests is better for long-term learning than studying and studying and studying and studying. This is what we call the testing effect. It turns out that for long-term learning, the most effective strategy is to take tests, not to learn. We'll talk more about that as we go. But you can actually maximize the benefits of testing. So if you look at this, we've got, if you study one time, you don't actually learn very much. If you take one test, and that's what retrieval means. Testing is just retrieving from long-term memory. There are big gains there. But if you take a test, and if somebody actually tells you how you did and which ones you got wrong, and it allows you to take a test again, and it tells you what got wrong, and you take a test again, that maximizes your gain. Again, without ever studying again, simply taking tests and getting feedback, taking tests, getting feedback. That's the testing effect. So, basically, what is it, and where has this been all my life? Because I'm telling you things now that don't seem quite right. We're going to explain why the testing effect works. But what is the testing effect? And in a nutshell, it says that effortful retrieval. That means if you spend time trying hard to remember something, that promotes long-term learning better than studying. And in a minute, I'll tell you what we mean by studying. Okay? You probably know what studying is, but studying could be taking tests. So we're not talking about taking tests, just trying to study. Effortful retrieval. Taking a test is better than studying. Now, number two, effect size. What is that? Well, in the research game, when you try an intervention with students, we talk about effect size, which means how big of an impact did that intervention make? Now, almost everything we do in education that we know is good for students, for instance, if we tell students, you should take notes, you should study, you should pay attention. Those kinds of things have effect sizes of about 0.2 on average. Which means, if you're not in a controlled study with students, where you're controlling all the variables, if instead you're in a classroom, you can't tell whether or not those things worked or not. Because an effect size of 0.2 isn't large enough to see unless it's a controlled study. Now, the testing effect has an effect size on average of about 0.5, which means if you go back to your classrooms next week and start doing the testing effect, you will see it in your actual classroom. You will see grades go up. It's that big of an effect. You can do it in any subject. Sounds like I'm going to sell you something now. So sign up here. Where has this been all our life? This is... Just is a timeshare. Well, and you get a set of knives too. This is an odd thing. Researchers have known about this for over 100 years. The problem is, the researchers who knew about it were cognitive scientists. Now, they have a long history of thinking of themselves as theoreticians, but not experimentalists or practitioners, meaning they knew this work, but they never told anybody in education. Because why would you do that? What's the point of that? So it was only about 15 years ago that some researchers said, hey, let's try the testing effect in schools to see if it would make a difference. This is over 100 years ago we started this. And they tried it out, and they got these fabulous gains. So we're here today to tell you about this. But how does testing compare to studying? Well, look at these two graphs. We can think about basic recall of information, or we can think about inferencing. So we've learned something, and now I'm going to ask you questions that extrapolate from what you know. We sometimes call that application questions, or critical thinking skills, whatever you want to call it. And we see in general, no matter if you're asking simple, straightforward recall or inference questions, studying once is about the worst thing you can do except never studying. But repeated studying is about as good as doing concept maps, which many of us use sometimes. That's a is a good way to study, doing concept maps. But no matter how you study, the testing fact always beats it. It's always better. Huh, how about that? We got to hear more about this. This sounds like something we should do. Just briefly, so what would a 0.5 effect size mean? Well, typically at the college level, when people implement this in a classroom, they see average grades in a classroom go from about a B minus to a B plus. So it's like 2 half grades, or about 10 percentage points. So if your typical final exam would have an average of 80%, now you get 90% on your final exam. There have been some large middle school tests on this, and they saw typically 16 percentage point increases. So in a large middle school class science curriculum, they saw the average score go from a C plus to an A minus on the final exam, just by doing 2 extra tests in a semester. So testing effect is really, really strong. And in elementary school, we've only started using it in elementary school because it's a little tricky there. So I don't have like grades, and I don't tend to give grades in elementary school anyway. But we will see students learning many times more than if you don't do the testing effect. So at the end of the session, we'll talk about how do you do it in school. But I want to digress just for a moment or two and tell you why the testing effect works. Because it doesn't seem like it should. How can taking tests make you smarter? Even when you don't get feedback. How did you learn by taking tests? Well, there are 3 things we need to know. These come out of cognitive science. This first one, I'm not going to justify it very much. I've got slides. If you want to hang around at the end or ask questions, I will prove this to you. But it goes basically like this. Most of the thinking that we do as humans depends on our long-term memory, what we can pull from memory. I know in school we like to talk about teaching critical thinking skills and problem-solving skills. The fact of the matter is, there's almost no such thing as that. If you want to become a good critical thinker, a good problem solver, what you need to do is put information in long-term memory that you can pull upon when you need it. In fact, you wouldn't understand a word I'm saying if it wasn't for your long-term memory now. You're connecting to things you already know. So that's like the first postulate. I'll say more about it later if you don't believe me, but that's number one. Most of our thinking depends on retrieving information from long-term memory. Even sophisticated stuff, problem solving. Number two, how do you get things into long-term memory? Because you need those for when you're thinking, and that's a different talk. I won't talk today. How do you get things into long-term memory? But here's the cool thing. Our models in cognitive science tell us that once something is in long-term memory, it's there forever. It doesn't go away. You might say, but I forget things. Probably what's happening is you can't find it. It's in there. You've forgotten it. Here's some examples of that. Have you ever walking down the street and you smell something, and suddenly you're remembering your grandmother's kitchen and you were 4 years old and how she used to wear her apron and bake cookies? There are memories there. You just didn't remember how to get there until you smelled something. Or you hear a song on the radio. This happens to me all the time. And suddenly I'm in high school again. And I'm thinking all those high school thoughts. And whoa. Or this also happens to me because I'm a pretty forgetful guy. See, if you said to me, this ought to go over big here. You want to play euchre? I've played that many times in my life. If you ask me right now, how do you play it? I have no idea. Deck of cards, then you do stuff. I don't know. But if you start teaching me, I'm going to say, oh yeah, and it comes right back. So it's in there. I just can't get it. Right? So this postulate two says, everything you learn is still in there. You just can't find it. here's the kicker. Our ability to retrieve what we know, it waxes and wanes depending on how useful our brain thinks that information is. And how does our brain make that decision? Well, the size based on how often you use it. If you use something often, your brain says, that's important, I gotta remember that. And it puts it in long-term memory where it's very accessible. But if you learn something and you don't use it, your brain says, well, forget this, just tuck it way, way in the back. We don't need it. Now, here's an actual brain scan of an individual. That guy was inside the brain. He's in charge of long-term memory. And you see all that clutter. Those are all your memories from your entire life. That's some guy in his office. If you look at that, you say, I bet he's kept everything he's ever had. He doesn't throw anything away. That's like your long-term memory. What can he find in that mess? Well, I guarantee you, he knows where the stuff is that he uses all the time. It's like, it's really accessible. He can grab it. He's got stuff in there he can't find at all anymore. It's covered with all that mess. Is it there? Yeah, it's there. Can he find it? No. That's what your long-term memory is like. Everything's in there. You just can't find the stuff unless you use it all the time. Now, unfortunately, school is all about trying to make memories, actually put things in long-term memory. That's what you're supposed to do in school. It's the only way to make your students smarter. There's nothing else you could do. Get things in long-term memory. You can't affect working memory and processing speed. That's genetic. But what you can do to raise the IQ of your students is get things in the long-term memory. And that's what we do well in school. What we don't do is bother practicing retrieving information. We think of tests as, oh, I gotta give an assessment. But actually, testing is all about practicing finding things when you need them. That's kind of missing in most education, formal education. So, testing effect works because you have to practice retrieving things from long-term memory. That's one thing we've been missing. How do you do that well? Well, first off, there's no point in asking people to retrieve information they already know well. You can ask me what my name is. There's no effort, I can just tell you. No. To make retrieval useful, you have to ask questions that are hard. They can't be too hard, though, that you can't remember anything. There's no benefit to being unable to remember. But you've got to put effort into it. You don't have to give feedback. Testing effect works whether or not you give feedback, but you really should, because it works better if you do. But even if you don't, remember that first research situation I told you about, those students didn't get any feedback, and yet they gained in their long-term memory. So feedback is really good. And you don't have to do it a whole lot. Now, Calvin, in our science education department, we have a policy which says every class we teach, every class period, we have to give a quiz. Just in case somebody gets lazy and stops doing it. We have to do it because it works so well. So we do it every single class period. You don't really have to do it that often. Especially in elementary, middle school, you just don't have to, because in college you go through the material a whole lot faster. So we give lots of quizzes, so we have time to do lots of retrieval because there's lots to be learned. But even if you do just a little bit, adding two tests a semester in middle school, remember, change the outcomes on the final exam by 16 percentage points. So even a little goes a long way. So how do you do it in middle school and high school? Practically, how do you do this testing effect to make it work? Then we'll do elementary school, which is a little tougher, actually. Number one, giving tests is a good way to do the testing effect. Makes sense. That's why they call it that. It's not just testing you can do, though, so that we stopped calling it the testing effect, but originally we called it the testing effect, so let's just call it that. Give tests. They don't have to be long. In our classes at college level, they take probably less than 10 minutes. We ask maybe 6 questions a day. Quizzes look something like that. Students have to answer those questions. We don't give a lot of room to write answers because we don't want them to spend a lot of time doing it. We just want them to recall important information. We'll do multiple choice. We'll do fill in the blanks. All things being equal, fill in the blanks are better than multiple choice because you have to work harder. But sometimes multiple choice is better. They're certainly easier to grade if you're going to grade them. We don't grade all of our quizzes. We just tell our students, here's a quiz, and they think we might grade it, so they try really hard, and that's all we care about. We don't care about the grade. It's each quiz is worth a very, very small fraction of a final grade, but students can't figure that out. They just think, oh, it's really important, I gotta try hard. And that's important, it's gotta be effortful. You can't say, here's a test, but it doesn't matter what you do. Then they won't try very hard. But multiple choice are easy to grade, fill-in slightly better. At the middle school, high school level, fill-in is slightly better. But I had a lot of students, I do a lot of multiple choice though. That's why. Just a couple times a semester, we do it every day, but a couple times a semester. If you don't want to give a quiz, you can give a low-stakes writing assignment. Where you simply say, for the next 10 minutes, you need to write down everything you know about inertia. And that's not something you did today, because you want them to work hard. If it's in short-term memory, we just did it, that's not the testing effect. You got to retrieve from long-term memory. So 2 weeks ago, we covered inertia. Today, you've got 2 minutes. Tell me what you know about inertia. And I'll grade you on the more you say that's relevant. So there you go. That's the testing effect, too. If you don't want to give a quiz, there's a writing assignment. It takes maybe 10 minutes of time. And then finally, flashcards. Flashcards, that's just the testing effect. If you do them properly. Except in middle school, high school, you usually do flashcards on your own as a studying strategy. So here's how to do flashcards properly in middle school, high school, college. You get your cards. You got questions on one side, you've got answers on the other side. You don't turn the cards over, you don't look. You read the question. If you know the answer right away, you just put that card away because there's no point in practicing retrieval on something you know. You only do retrieval on things you struggle with. And then you try to answer the question, and you try, and eventually you turn it over to see if you got it right. But if it was a struggle, you put that into the hard pile. So you end up with an easy pile, hard pile. And then in the future, you only practice the hard ones. Maybe once a year you can go do the easy ones again so you don't forget. But flashcards, that's just the testing effect. How long should you do any of these things, like flashcards, writing assignments, quizzes? Tops 5 or 10 minutes is all it's really good for because of cognitive fatigue. Retrieval is hard, and pretty quickly you get tired. So 5 or 10 minutes and then you stop. That's flashcards are never longer than that. Go ahead.
Are hard copies of flashcards that kids actually hold in their hand better than Quizlet, like online flashcards, or do you not know?
I do know, and it doesn't matter as long as the student cannot check the answer immediately. Don't let them do that because they will, because they want to know the answer, and then you've ruined the retrieval practice. This is sort of like looking at the audience. So many of you, I'm sure, have older relatives that are starting to get memory issues, like a mother like that. So if you're out with your relative and your relative sees somebody they know, can't remember their name, and they're saying, what should you do?
Give them time.
Give them time. What's the worst thing you can do? Tell them who it is. See, you're robbing them of that retrieval practice, which means the next time they see that person, it's going to be even harder to remember their names. So same way with flashcards, no matter how you implement them, if the students can quickly turn them over to see the answer, they're going to ruin the effect. So, I mean, if they're studying on their own, you can't stop them, I suppose. But don't set up a situation where they can quickly turn it over or click to see the answer. They will. Learning's hard. Retrieval's hard. It's got to be effortful. And so we short-circuit it. We take the easy way out when we can. I'm going to talk about elementary school in a minute. Any other questions about middle school, high school? Yes?
What about like with learning disabilities? Like I have dyslexia and retrieval is just an issue to start with. Is there any implications to the research with that?
I will say yes and I'll say no. No, in terms of the no is that they just haven't done research on people like that yet, because they're still figuring out, the middle of the bell curve right now. I can tell you though that I can give you an example. My wife and I do refugee foster care for unaccompanied minors. And so we often have children in our home who are suffering from PTSD. So they have memory issues because of that. And what I find is that for the age that you find them, the retrieval practice you might do with them doesn't work. You have to revert back to much younger comparison groups. So for instance, one daughter who was 17, for her to do memory retrieval, I had to treat her more like a 6 or 7 year old. But that's just something I discovered. There's not lots and lots of research I can tell you to read about.
So be prepared to implement some of the elementary things you talked about with some of your students who struggle at the high school.
Yes. Yes, and you'll see at the elementary level it is a little different what you would do. Yes, sir?
You had brought up the idea of adding a couple of tests, but I want to clarify what you say there. If I have A through Z information, and I used to give 3 tests, so whatever, A through a third, and then the next, and then the next, and now I put in 5 tests, but I'm still just covering A through
yes.
Z, I just have less information in each test. That's not what you're talking about.
Because that would still
retrieve more information more times. I'm just giving you less information to retrieve each time.
Exactly.
So when you say adding in some tests, it's more about adding so that we end up hitting it more times.
Correct. So you will ask a similar question on more than one test. So it's a question on the same topic.
Exactly.
Sorry. I can yell at
Mark.
Oh, yes. And by the way, I'm only talking about long-term learning here. So by long-term learning, I mean any learning that lasts longer than a week. So if tomorrow you have a big examination and you want to do well on it, the best way to do well on an examination the next day is to cram all night and study. But that type of learning doesn't go into long-term memory. It lasts for about 48 hours tops and then it's gone. And everybody who's ever crammed, they know this, right? You don't remember anything later. So if it's the next day, go ahead and cram. Don't take tests, cram. But for a week or longer, then you want to do the testing effect. Now I didn't bring the data with me, but typically, if you look, I showed you that middle school experiment where the average grade went from C+ to A-. They retested those kids 6 months after the class was over. And the children who had done retrieval practice on content remembered 9 times more than those who hadn't. 9 times more. So that's real long-term learning. But they have to have done it multiple times. Yes?
You changed the total format of a test so that one is objective and one is a little bit more subjective when you're writing. Do you get the same success in subsequent tests? Because it seems like students could figure out your testing method and figure you out. So is their recall just as good if they have to change the way they test?
So general rule of thumb, if you want the students to be really good at recalling, fill in the blank space, then that's how you should quiz them. If you want them to get good at multiple choice tests, then you should quiz them that way. So yes, our brains actually adjust to the test format. That's why I said earlier, all things being equal, and there's a lot of other subtleties going on here, but all things being equal, if you simply want someone to learn something long-term and you want them to be ready to know that information no matter what the context, then you should give fill in the blanks, not multiple choice.
Do you mean by short answer?
Sorry, short answer. By fill in the blank, I mean short answer, not fill in one word. I mean a short answer described to me. Now, when we work with, for example, the nursing program at Kelvin, they have a really large, important nursing exam they've got to pass in order to become certified to be a nurse, and that's all multiple choice. So in the nursing program at Kelvin, they specifically, those who are doing this specifically, want to only give multiple choice questions on their quizzes and tests so that the students will do better on that final test. And, okay, I see that. I would like them to really be good when they're with real people after they graduate as well. But I understand the motivation of passing the certification test, because if they don't pass that, they will never be working on real people. So there is, like all things in education, it's like, well, do you want this outcome or that? You can't have both. You can't have both. Let's look at elementary school. So, this is kind of new. First people said, hey, the testing effect actually works in real life. And then said, hey, it works in college. And hey, it works in high school and middle school. And let's try in elementary school. And they said, oh, it's not exactly the same here. So, how do you use the testing effect in elementary school? Well, turns out, and what's elementary school anyway? Well, it depends what they did the research on. And so I'm thinking actually like third or fourth graders. I'm probably not even talking about first graders yet. In fact, I think the traditional methods, and this is just a hunch, I can't prove it. I think what we've done traditionally with first kindergartners with flashcards, drill, and practice is all the memory retrieval we need to be doing. But once you hit third and fourth grade, memory retrieval really does work with some changes here. The first one is, during the learning process, it seems like you want to test the students right while they're learning. For older students, you don't do that. You learn, you try to understand it, and a week later you test them. That doesn't work. If you try that in elementary school, you wait a week, they don't seem to know anything. They can't retrieve it. And if you can't retrieve, the retrieval testing effect doesn't work. So what does seem to work is test them while they're learning, and then retest them later the same way. One example of doing this is fill in the blank sheets. Because when you give third or fourth graders a space to write out some answers to some questions, mostly they leave them blank. It's just not productive. So fill in the blanks. Rain usually falls from. I would give this to my students while we're learning about different cloud types. And we're learning that nimbus clouds are the ones that rain. And right while we're learning about that, let's fill in the blank here. Nimbus clouds. And then a week later, I can use that same test with the blank there, and they write in nimbus clouds. So we're scaffolding for them. They just don't retrieve without the scaffolding. It just doesn't work. And in long term, there's no benefit. So So fill in the blank sheets during instruction and then afterwards. So this is not just testing later, it's testing while you're learning. In fact, I would make an argument that doing these tests while they're learning is not the testing effect at all, it's something else. And we can talk about that later if y'all want, but it's not the testing effect. But you gotta do it during instruction. Otherwise, the testing effect doesn't work in elementary school. They've tried it, it just, nothing there. But this way, this works. Or, during instruction and afterwards, you can give simple multiple choice questions. But be careful here. This is really important in elementary school. When you give multiple choice questions after the students answer them, you immediately have to give feedback on what's right and what's incorrect. Because you remember what you think about. If you think about the wrong answers, that's what they remember. So if you correct them, then multiple choice tests work. Something like this. During instruction and a week after and 2 weeks after, what type of cloud produces rain? Nimbus. Got it. And now this is retrievable from long-term memory. Concept maps. We actually saw earlier, you may not remember, but testing effect works better than concept map. But for elementary kids, if you give them a scaffolded concept map during instruction and then afterwards, that's really, really beneficial. What's a scaffolded concept map? Well, something like this where you fill in most of the blanks for them. You say clouds, and it's a little fuzzy, sorry about that. Like the bottom one says, fog is made of what type of cloud? So you give them that concept map during instruction, but then you use that for testing later, and there's huge benefits. I told you, they will learn more this way, like 3, 4, 5 times more than if you don't do this. It's phenomenal. Well, it's a policy with us. You have to do quizzing if you want to work with us. It works so well. And then flashcards, of course. Or drill and practice. Never more than like 5 minutes. There's brain fatigue. But at the same time, you don't want to ever repeat. Like you could go through your 2x tables, 1 time. Don't do it twice. Because the second time through, you're not pulling from long-term memory. It's short-term memory, and that doesn't benefit you. So no more than 5 or 10 minutes a day. Stop practicing when it's automatic. Once the students can say things quickly, just stop doing it. You're wasting your time. It's just not useful. And you do it like this. The left side is good, the right side is not good. The right side, there's a pattern there, you see. And I can still say all my times table up through 9 really fast without thinking. And that's a problem. I'm not thinking. But when I see 2 times 3, 4 times 2, 3 times 3, 1 times 5, there's no pattern there, so I have to retrieve from long-term memory. Nothing wrong with learning our 2 times tables and our 3 times table sequentially. But once we've got them down, we don't keep drilling on them that way. We mix them up. That's real retrieval. Now, all students at first say, I don't like this. I can do the ones on the right faster than the ones on the left. It feels better. So does candy. Eating candy feels better. But long-term gain, it's the hard stuff that makes a difference. Now, at high school, college level, if students are new to the testing effect, the first week or so, they say, I hate this. And after 4 or 5 weeks, they beg us every day, can we take a quiz? And if one day we show up in class and we don't have a quiz, because, I don't know, we're busy, we just didn't get to one, they get upset. Well, you've got to quiz us. You have to, because we learn so much that way. And when the final comes up, they say, we don't really have to study. You've asked us every question so many times, so many different ways. I know it all. So we say, please study anyway, just in case. You feel badly. I want to stop and just say, well, we've got 15 minutes.
Five.
17, technically. I rounded off. So. Questions? Yes, ma'am.
Can you give a lecture?
Sorry?
Can you lecture? I mean, give a clear
reminder. Oh. Sure. The question is, if you're middle school, high school, especially high school, middle school, you probably aren't going to get a quiz every day. You just aren't. You could. You don't need to. High school, though, you might say, I want to give a quiz a couple times a week. When should I give the quiz? At the beginning of class, right in the middle, or at the end? Doesn't matter. Well, that's a good question, Crystal. Thank you. It sort of matters a little bit, and it depends. There's a lot of depends. But here's the big thing. Don't do this. Don't teach your students about something, like inertia, and then spend the last 10 minutes of class quizzing them on inertia. Because all of that information they write down is not coming from long-term memory. It's all, I'm going to call it short-term memory. It's not really short-term memory. It's all still bouncing around in their brain. It doesn't take much effort on their part. So you can give quizzes at the end of a class period, but don't quiz on what you did during that class period. Quiz on things from before. 2 days before, a month before, 6 months before, not that day. That's not the testing effect. That's actually a nice way to review, but you won't get the benefits of the testing effect. Great question. Other comments? Questions, I should say. Yes?
So would it be helpful then if you then had a homework assignment where you wanted them to retrieve something? That would be too soon if it was something you covered that day?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
But, so, goes like this. When you give a homework assignment, especially in high school, there's no guarantee that the students will do that assignment by retrieving from long-term memory. They have notes, they have textbooks, they have parents, they have Google. So it looks like you just can't get meaningful memory retrieval done at home because students will short-circuit the whole thing. You kind of got to do it in class, we find. And it's got to be worth some points. Even if those are meaningless points, students, again, they don't do math. It's just points are points. So then they will try. But they will do whatever's possible to short circuit. That's the first thing I would do. If you ask me a bunch of questions for homework and I'm going to get a grade on it, I'm going to look up the answers to make sure I'm right. I haven't done it. Yes?
Where does this all fit in with like other science education practices, like the learning cycle, right? Talk about doing the hands-on stuff and inquiry and all this other stuff that you guys have talked about for a long time. Where does this fit in to that type of teaching?
It's an add-on in this respect. So Kate's talking about the learning cycle, which is, if you're going to teach a science lesson, and I would argue in many other disciplines as well, the best generic way of doing that is using a learning cycle, where students first get some guided experience that's concrete, so they're not working with abstractions, and then there's an opportunity to discuss what does all that mean, and then there's an application phase, where you practice what you just learned and you learn to apply it. So there's the learning cycle. The only modification I would make to the learning cycle with this is, when the learning cycle was invented, it was always assumed the application phase came right after the teaching. And some of it should, but this says some of that application should happen weeks later so that the students have to pull from long-term memory. So in my classes, when we do the learning cycle, I say, and then don't forget. You've got to do memory retrieval in addition to the application right afterwards. And all the students say, yeah, that's right. But they believe everything I say, and they do it whatever I say. That's amazing. I can't believe it. Yes?
You said like all thinking is in some respect memory retrieval.
Almost all thinking.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like you were talking about like with inertia. So is there going to be what kind of difference is if the quiz is, you know, tell me what you know about inertia versus giving them a problem to solve? Like an application problem in inertia.
So one is harder than the other. An application is always harder. It's known as transfer. Can you take a concept and transfer to a new domain or context you've never been in before? That's always very difficult. It's also difficult as a teacher when you've been teaching students how to calculate the area of a rectangle and you've done it 3 or 4 times and everybody's doing it beautifully. And then you say, can you calculate the area of your desk? And they all say, well, I never did that one before. That's transfer. It's like, wait a minute, weren't we just doing that? Well, from a student's perspective, they haven't because they haven't stored that information that way. They've compartmentalized it. So believe it or not, it sounds like I'm selling you everything plus the Ginzu-Nizer for free, but when it comes to transfer, memory retrieval is, we don't do transfer very well in any domain, but the memory retrieval or testing effect does very, very good at transfer. So because I keep asking you questions about what you know, and because I'm asking you questions that are going to be different than the way you were thinking about them, because we're different people, that causes your brain to restore the memories that are more accessible now to different contexts and domains.
So the application problems are very effective in the testing effect.
Absolutely. So when they study testing effect, does that lead to better transfer to new contexts than traditional things? Yes, it does. It does. Oh, you want to add to that? Okay, go ahead, yes.
It's my understanding, and I wonder if you could comment on this, that using these, you know, small, short testing kinds of things, and then, you know, in the study you referenced, they didn't tell them whether or not they got it right or wrong, which is its own thing. But telling students whether they're right or wrong, but then it's my understanding that if you get it right and your neighbor is getting them wrong, you actually are still both benefiting about the same, even though, so like, trying to retrieve it and have a kid go, but I don't even... Still try, because even if you tried and you got it wrong, when you find out you're wrong, you are still getting almost the same benefits as the person who tried and got it right.
And it's another opportunity to learn. Maybe they never learned it, and that's why they can't retrieve it. Mm-hmm. It may not just be hidden in there. It may not even be in there. But there's another learning opportunity. So when you do quizzing or writing assignments, immediately afterwards, especially if they're multiple choice tests, you should go over the right answers. Especially with the young kids. If you don't go over the correct answers with young children, the testing effect doesn't work at elementary level. That's really clear. It still works for middle school, high school, but the little kids, you've got to tell them the right answer.
For middle school, high school, you said not to do it right away, though, like how much time?
The testing part or the...
To tell them the right answer.
Oh, no, immediately.
Oh, yes. Well, I thought you said not to tell them right away what the right answer was.
If I said that, I meant like if they're struggling to get something, you shouldn't step in and allow them to get. But after you take your quiz, then you go over that immediately.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, even if you don't, they learn, but it's better if you do. Yes?
Is it better or worse, like, if a student knows that the quiz is coming, like, they know they're going to have a quiz on inertia on Thursday, and they learned about it 2 weeks ago, how does that affect things? Like, because they're going to try to study for it maybe the night before, and then it's not necessarily going to be long
So these quizzes should be, the students should be aware there's going to be a quiz, but they shouldn't know what's on it. Because that kind of, yeah. So what we see our students do before class, many of them, is right before class starts, we always give our quizzes first thing, right after the devotions. I see them reading over their notes because they want to do well on the quiz. And then to the education students, I say to them, let's think this through. What's better for you? If you put those notes away and take this cold, or if you review and try to get a better score in your quiz? And of course, the answer is they shouldn't look at their notes beforehand. They're short-circuiting the whole process. So if they don't know what's on there, that kind of helps. They don't know what to look at. In college, you cover things so fast that they know many questions on today's quiz will be from the last class period. But other questions will be from a long time ago. Anything else? We have really one more. Yes, or two more.
You mentioned the nursing student.
Yes.
And is that more about format than content? How does this speak to standardized testing as far as math testing, eye steps, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, those are things where you don't test specific content over and over and over.
No, you don't, which is a real shame. So we, in the science education department, Calvin, believe in teaching to the test. We think that's a good thing if the test is good. Of course you should teach to the test. And your test should be good tests, meaning you test on what you think is really, really important. But these random tests, you don't know what's going to be on there. So that's difficult. You can't teach those tests, but we can say this. Your brain gets better at anything it practices. So if you practice multiple choice questions, you will get better at them. So there you go. No matter what the content is, you will get better at them. Once again, as you get older like me and you think, how will I keep my brain active and not going into dementia? And a lot of people think, oh, I know, I will work crossword puzzles every day. Bad idea. Because you will then get really good at crossword puzzles, but nothing else. So your brain adapts to whatever your task is put before it. It's better that it doesn't know what it's going to have to do, and then you become much more flexible. But practicing multiple choice tests, if your goal is for students to do well on multiple choice tests, well, that's something you can do. If that's what you want to do. None of my business, so I'm not. Yes?
Is there unlimited, like, fast retrieval, or are we pushing other stuff out of that fast retrieval as we cram our subject in?
The simple answer to that is no. You're not pushing other things out of the way. By the way, your brain has effectively an infinite amount of storage space in it. So you cannot live long enough to fill up your brain for long-term memory. So that's a good thing. But if you practice retrieving some things, does that push other things out of the way? It doesn't, except if you stop practicing retrieving things, they will get buried over time. And there's only so many hours in a day. So you cannot become really proficient at retrieving everything in your long-term memory, no matter the context. That'll never happen, because you don't have time to practice all that. But you won't push things out of the way. One more question. Yes?
I find it interesting that we talk about giving feedback to students, and yet one thing that we don't do is give feedback after the exam is taken. You're given a grade and sent on your way. I've learned nothing about my ability to retrieve long-term information on the critical exam. Mm-hmm. We're not even, you can't even have it back in your possession. So why do we do that?
So we can reuse that exam?
It's not about the teacher, it's about the kids.
It's about the kids. Yeah, so here's something that at first may sound pretty controversial, but if you think it through, it's okay. I think it is. Let's suppose you're going to give a cumulative final exam over the entire school year. But now we know about the testing effect. We don't have a lot of time, we think, to do a lot of testing in school, but you actually do. Because the more you test, the more they learn. So you got plenty of time. But let's suppose you think you don't. You're only going to give one practice memory retrieval test. When should you do it? For long-term learning and for students to do the best on the final. Well, I would do it a few days before your final. And then I would give them feedback on how they did. And then, of course, I wouldn't give them the same test for the final. That's kind of unfair. I'd give them a different test, but on the same subject. And then you will find they do the best that way. So this is kind of part of what you're saying. It gives you a chance to give them feedback on final before they take the final. And then when we test these students, again, months and months later, what they remember from your course is many, many, many times, and over 10 times more than the students who just took the final exam and went home. And didn't take that one extra test with the feedback. So it's a long-term thing. So yeah, I would recommend right before the final, my students always want me to review. I refuse to review. What a waste of time. So here's a test. That's the best review for long-term learning. Thank you for coming. If you want copies of, say, the PowerPoint or a research article or something else from us, we didn't bring a handout because we didn't. But what we did bring is little cards with my email on it. Just send me an email and say, Jim, send me this. Or Jim, I want my Ginzu knife. I didn't get them. Whatever it is. Just send me an email and you can count.
Please join me in thanking our panel.